This episode of Infinite Canvas Ultra is brought to you by a man's love for his wife. Love your wife. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Infinite Canvas Ultra, Episode 4. I'm Daniel Fiorio.
And I'm Michael Lane.
This week, for the headliner, you've been waiting for it. It's an idea that we have been kicking along since we recorded Episode 2, actually. Mm-hmm. And the album was just kind of fresh off of its release. We are talking about The Big Day by Chance the Rapper. May God have mercy on all of our souls. Chance would approve of that message, because I just said God.
We love God.
We love God. And
our wives.
This album, I don't know. I'm not going to spoil anything. We're just going to leave it.
We'll get there.
Also today, we are introducing a new segment called Panel Discussions, where Michael and I talk about classic to underrated to just flat out great comic book storylines that deserve your attention and that you should read too. And then also, we will be just talking about new latest singles from Brockhampton, JPEG Mafia, new albums by Marika Hackman, and, you know, just whatever else comes
up. See what else comes up.
Stay tuned, guys. It's going to be a good one. Hello, everybody. Infinite Canvas Ultra, Episode 4. We're here. Happy to be doing it. How's your week been, Michael?
It's been good. It's been a slow week in terms of work. What is it, Wednesday today while we're recording?
Yeah.
A hump day. But yeah, no, it's been good. I've been enjoying a lot of good comics, a lot of good TV, actually, which is surprising for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, how you been?
Been doing great. It's been pretty busy, actually, for me. It's been a short week, but a busy one. I'm happy about that. That's good. I like being busy.
Yeah.
We speaking of the busyness, we started off our week actually appearing on my good friend Ian Scherer, his podcast, the 616 Entertainment Podcast. Both Michael and I were on there. It was a good time.
Oh, it was so much fun. We literally talked for 3 hours and never stopped. And exactly. By the end of the 3 hours, we were like, how long was that? An hour? No, yep. That was 3 hours of podcasting we did there.
That's how Ian and the artist formerly known as Mike Charles do it. Big early shout outs to them. That episode is not up yet.
No, it is up. It's up
today. Oh, is it up?
Yeah, I shared it on our Twitter account.
I am slacking. I need to share that then. So actually, that episode will have been out for about 2 weeks by the time you hear this mm-hmm. episode, because we're workhorses. We do this shit way in advance.
Yeah.
But yeah, get around to listening to that if you want a double dose of Infinite Canvas in your week.
The big 616 Entertainment and Infinite Canvas Ultra crossover episode.
Exactly.
The first of maybe a number
exactly.
that will be coming in the future.
Yeah. We're the podcast Avengers. We're the South Suburbs of Chicago Avengers. Yeah, it was a great time. And yeah, definitely give the episode a listen. It's really good. It's like what we do, but a bit more loose, but still just as, you know, nerdy and talking about all the things you'd expect
super
us to fun, talk about.
Very funny. We like created in-jokes during that episode about balls. It's a lot of fun. It's a good time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah. So there's been a lot of, speaking of, like, you know, you're talking about TV shows coming out, one thing that we have to address on this show and a bit of news that I am very, very excited about is Nathan Fielder mm-hmm. of Nathan For You fame is allegedly, he's coming back.
Yeah. Finally. After what? 2 years? Maybe?
I think
or a
so.
Year and a half at least?
I want to say
since the end of Nathan For You?
Yeah, probably closer to a year and a half at this point.
Is that like early 2018 maybe?
Yeah, I think actually, I think the show ended probably around, I want to say like November, December of 2017.
Okay. So it feels longer.
It really does.
A world without Nathan Fielder is not a world I want to live in. So
I know, it's terrible. Yeah, I'm so excited to hear that he's back. From what I've heard, this show is actually going to be kind of more mockumentary mm-hmm. stuff. Well, I mean, Nathan For You obviously was, but this is like sort of a scripted thing where he's actually playing a character.
Okay, so I run me down the news for it again, because I saw the headline for it and I read, I you know, glanced through the article and it sounded like it was a he's producing a show for HBO. Or am I wrong about
He
that?
is producing, but it's actually this show.
It
So
is
he's going
this
to
one.
be starring, writing, and producing in
Okay.
this.
I thought it was like he was producing for like somebody else.
Yeah.
Okay, if
The
it
article I read, it was from Variety, I believe.
Okay.
And it actually, like, I kind of felt that that's what it was at first, too. But then I read it more, and it said that he would actually be starring
Okay.
as the lead character.
But it
So.
sounded very similar to Nathan For You, where he's going around to, real people and giving advice was the.
Yeah, basically he's this, from what I remember, I guess the premise is he's this washed up has-been writer from New York, and he's kind of trying to get his career started again, but is also consulting other people who have problems in his neighborhood and stuff like that.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you guys don't know anything about us, we're huge fans of Nathan For You, which is a Comedy Central show that ran for 4 seasons, just a couple years back, and
One of my favorite TV shows of all
yeah,
time. I
no,
can say that now that it's completely
yeah,
done.
that show is one of the funniest shows you'll find on TV of the last decade for sure,
Not to mention it
even
has,
longer.
yeah, not to mention it has probably the perfect finale
Oh
to
yeah.
it, which is so funny for a show that is so ridiculous and absurd as it is. It legitimately has one of the best series finales of any TV show I've
And
ever
it's
watched.
just a legitimately great, like they could have split that last episode out, which is like a it's about an hour and a half long.
It's almost like a film length.
Yeah,
It's
it is
ridiculous.
like totally a documentary film length, and they could have split that out to be a documentary in itself. And it, even outside of the Nathan For You realm, that episode works completely by its
Absolutely.
own and in its own right. And yeah, I really need to go back and watch Finding Francis again, but yeah,
Absolutely.
Nathan For You, a phenomenal show. I can't wait to see what he's got up next.
If you guys haven't watched it, the whole series is on Hulu. So if
Yeah.
you have a Hulu account, there's no
Who
excuse. Go
doesn't
watch
have
some
a
Nathan
Hulu
For You.
account? You can get a Hulu
Seriously.
account with everything today. We talked about it
Exactly.
on the podcast we guested on,
Yeah,
but
on
you can literally
616.
find Hulu like through any kind of subscription you
It's
have.
attached to different subscription services, even ones that aren't pertaining to movies or TV. You could get a Spotify subscription and have
Yeah.
Hulu. It's
I
crazy.
swear you'll go to like a McDonald's one day and the Happy Meal will be a Hulu
Comes with a
subscription.
Hulu subscription.
Honestly.
That'd be great. That would be such a sign of living in 2019.
Yeah,
My God, that'd
that's
be
true.
insane. So something I wanted to talk about on the show, and it kind of pains me. And honestly, on this episode, we're gonna be talking about a lot of things that pain me. You'll find out what that means more in the episode.
Yeah.
Wanted to talk about Brockhampton,
Yeah.
the LA-based hip hop collective. They've been putting out a couple new singles in preparation for their new album Ginger and their Saturation Trilogy, which is what kind of brought them to fame. Their debut, basically, not counting a mixtape that they had out before, was my favorite record series, I guess you could say, of 2017.
Yeah,
I mean, I would count all three as like my favorite
favorite
release
piece of
of
music in
favorite piece of
2017.
music in 2017. And I'm a huge, huge fan of their follow-up, Iridescence, which came out last year. But Michael and I are both, well, I'm gonna say we're, because I think Michael's fallen off the
Oh
Brockhampton train a bit, but
yeah.
we're a little disappointed by these new singles,
Yeah.
which is a shame. I'm honestly blanking so hard on the names of those songs right now. I'm gonna bring those up right now.
I literally couldn't
I know
even tell
one is
you.
like if you pray right something something and
It's really unfortunate as Dan brings these up because, as he just said, this was, when they made Saturation 1, 2, and 3 in 2017, like you couldn't tell me to stop listening to
oh,
Brockhampton. Like it was
absolutely.
just on perpetually, every week of that year for me. Even Iridescence, which I thought was a bit of a step down from Saturation, was still at least a fairly good record, and I enjoyed it a
Yeah.
lot. It was their first like studio release, their first big, they
With
got a
RCA
contract with
Records.
RCA.
And I feel like a lot of people who aren't as hyped about that album as I am, they still admit, like, it has its moments.
Yeah, for
And also
sure.
those tracks were If You Pray Right and I've Been Born Again, which
Yeah.
that one, whew,
And I really I've been don't Born like Again
that song.
was
That's
their
the first
that was their
single
first single
for Ginger, for their
yeah
new
this
record.
new album that's coming supposed to come out this month in August sometime.
There will be an episode on
maybe
this,
by the time you
I assure you.
Maybe by the time this podcast comes out and you're listening to it, it's the Brockhampton album's already dropped, but they haven't set a date. They just said August, so who knows? But they also have a new single coming out tonight as we're recording this, called Boy Bye, I believe it was called.
Yeah.
And I literally, like I said, you couldn't pull me away from Brockhampton in 2017. Even in 2018, I was super psyched on their new album. And, you know, today I saw the tweet that they were putting out a new song, and I just, you know, I thought to myself, like, whatever, I'll
kinda
get
don't
to
care.
It, I guess,
yeah.
when the album comes out. Like,
it's really sad.
Before I would have watched the music video for whatever new single they were putting out during the Saturation era. Like, I would have watched it that night, for sure.
Exactly.
And probably enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially those Saturation singles were so on point, even the Iridescence ones.
Absolutely.
And, everything that they've put out in the last 6 months, or you know, even the well, I guess these all these ones have been like the last like few weeks since Iridescence have just been very disappointing.
Very,
very,
very
disappointing.
Disappointing. Especially I've Been Born Again. Like every time, once that track came out, this was 2 weeks ago now. I've been trying to convince myself that I don't feel the way that I do about it, but I can't deny it anymore. It's just it's a sloppy mess. It's just so disorganized as a song, like it literally doesn't even make sense what they're trying to do. There's like no cohesion to that track at all. It just sounds like a bunch of ideas just kind of flying at you, which those ideas sound pretty good, but the way it's put together, it just
there's no
doesn't add up to anything.
Yeah.
There's no cohesiveness, and it's just like I'm excited sort of by the prospect of them getting more experimental. If you were to tell me, like, this is, in my opinion, from what I've heard from these singles, it's kind of shaping up to be maybe the most ambitious, maybe not in a good way, experimental thing that they've ever done. I mean, I'm super thrilled about that, and, you know, like the idea of that, but it's just not gearing up to be anything that I'm genuinely hyped for. But hopefully once the album drops, all those feelings will be gone and I'll actually really enjoy this as a body of work, but that remains to be seen.
Have they said that these singles are from the album? Because last time they did single drops like this, right,
that's
before
true.
Iridescence, they were not on the album. And those songs, the 1990,
those
whatever
songs,
call, songs you want to call them,
yeah,
those were really great.
Those
honestly,
really
those
great.
Were maybe better than most of the tracks off Iridescence in my point of view.
Sure.
So, you know, hopefully
I'm going to go that far. I love those both
right.
equally.
Sure.
No surprise. But I do wish that we would get a project like that.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that something like that. Not that I'm saying that they need to go back to that sound or, you know, recapture what they once were before. But I don't know. I'm just not sure about this direction.
Now, I was talking with friends about Brockhampton recently, and I think I've seen this been seeing this coming for a little while now. I feel like they're kind of just cringy at this point.
It's getting a little bit like that.
You know,
yeah.
when Kevin Abstract did his like 10-hour live stream where he was walking on a treadmill for 10 hours in the
Which
middle of his street.
One of the most absurd things. And that's crazy that just happened this year.
That
feels like
that
happened
like
2 years
ago or something. Yeah.
Like doesn't that feel like that was so long ago in retrospect? Like it's insane.
Yeah.
And it's just I don't know, they keep Kevin Abstract especially just kind of keeps doing, these like dumb PR things that just are insanely cringy and just kind of makes me embarrassed
it's
be
so
a
weird.
Fan of him and
mm-hmm.
his work with Brockhampton.
And I you know, I loved him and all, you know, the one thing I he, like, he was such a good hook writer in the first, like, three albums, especially. Like, every single off Saturation 1 through 3, like, had a really great hook. It was always, like, Kevin Abstract's, like, Little Baby, where he was, like, putting it out into the world, and it always sounded great, you know? Like, you think
exactly.
of, like, Gold or, you know...
Absolutely.
So many tracks, and he, like, the hooks on any of these songs are... They're just not there.
They're non-existent.
There's just nothing there, and I think the... Just the quality of rapping from the other members is, you know, not as strong as it used to be.
No.
I know, and I think I remember hearing Kevin Abstract saying that he's kind of in a bad spot after this, you know, after he took the RCA deal. and like where they're contracted for 3 years and have to make six albums or something like that. And I don't know what the status of that contract is and whatnot, but if this is the quality of stuff that they're going to be putting out for
It's
for these 3 years,
very, and it's
it's.
also kind of amazing that this is major label released material, you know? This seems like the kind of stuff that an artist would make once they got out of their contract and were just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna do whatever. And it's kind of absurd. It's almost like it kind of, I mean, I'm sure it isn't, but it almost sort of seems like they're sabotaging their contract in a way, like almost trying to get thrown off. It's pretty weird.
It's super weird. The songs are very underbaked. Like we said, that new song comes out tonight, and I have no interest in hearing it tonight, if
Yeah.
I'm being honest. Maybe it'll be great,
I'm
and
gonna check it
maybe it'll
out.
spin it around.
I got a lot of love for them still. I'm gonna check it out, but I'm not really holding my breath for anything fantastic. But speaking of albums and music that is fantastic, we gotta talk about the new Marika Hackman
Yes,
record.
we do. Totally on the opposite end of my thoughts for Brockhampton would be my thoughts for Marika Hackman and her new album, which I'm actually, no, Dan is totally looking it up right now. It's called Any Human Friend, and it came out
Yes.
this past Friday, the week that we're recording this, and
It's a follow-up to a very wonderful album that came out in 2017 by her called I'm Not Your Man. She is an artist signed to Sub Pop Records, the luminary indie music label. Totally a perfect fit for that label. She's great. Just an indie singer-songwriter. She kind of takes, I would say on I'm Not Your Man, she kind of had a sort of jangle pop type aesthetic to her music. Think like a bit of a less wordy, more hook heavy Courtney Barnett probably. This one, it's kind of all over the place in a very, very good way.
This album, and I've listened to it. Today's Wednesday. It came out on Friday, and I've probably listened to it in the span of 5 days at least a dozen times. Like, there was one day where I was just listening to it. As soon as it would finish, I would just hit play on it again. And it really does. It does go a lot of places stylistically. It's very groovy, a lot of the tracks. Like, some of the tracks, even some of the guitar hooks remind me of like Angles era Strokes
I can see that. Yeah,
somehow.
there's it's very 80s influence. Her last record, I'm Not Your Man, is definitely not like that. It's more just a straightforward indie rock record. And this one, it definitely has patches of sort of 80s synth kind of lingering around on some tracks. Other tracks that are more just straightforward indie cuts, but all around, just amazing songwriting. The lyricism on this thing is super great. Just
Really
basically a
strong.
concept record about just isolation, loneliness, kind of finding yourself and like finding your place in the world, which is just delivered so beautifully and so well on this record.
I can't recommend this one enough.
What's
It's
your favorite track on this album?
I'm trying to think. I really enjoy Blow, I think is a really great one. It's hard to, for me at least, when I'm listening to stuff, I'm usually listening on Spotify and it's just kind of like all jumbled together, so I sometimes, don't really recognize the songs by title. But I would say, like, Blow, the second song, The One, is really great. Even the last track, Any Human Friend, is a really nice close. I really think this song is or this album is really strong front to back. I don't think there's a track that I dislike.
No spoilers for once we get to the end of the year. And also, I just want to add in, I'd probably go track 7, Han Solo, and actually back to back, track 8, Conventional Ride. Those are
Yes,
my two
Conventional
favorite.
Ride is really
Conventional Ride
great
is
too.
definitely my favorite song in this album. It's just such a simple, really good, just rock song. I absolutely love it. But yeah, no spoilers for what our year-end lists end up being, but do you think if this came out before we recorded our episode last week, this would have kind of adjusted your top five list?
I'm trying to think.
Or is
It
that
might.
too early?
It really might have. It definitely would have been in the honorable mentions for sure. Something would have definitely gotten kicked out of there for sure. Yeah, I've been really enjoying this record a lot, and I didn't really know how to describe it to a friend I was talking to the other day, and I think my best kind of reference point I told them was like Mitski if it wasn't like super duper sad, and like, because it kind of has like, at least with like the last few Mitski albums where there are these big like rock songs, but then there's a lot of like kind of more experimental and spare songs in the mix too on this record, and I thought that was a kind of a good recommendation if you are a fan of like someone like Mitski who has a lot more play. I think Marika Hackman is a great place to go to with this album especially.
I agree. Any Human Friend by Marika Hackman. Infinite Canvas Ultra endorsed. Absolutely.
Definitely.
So we're going to take a short little break, and then we're going to get to the debut of Panel Discussions, our new little feature where we talk about some great comic book storylines that, or maybe bad, depending on how
Who
we're feeling
knows?
about it. But
This one,
this one's
this
going to be a
week's,
positive one.
yeah,
It's
this is a good one.
going to be a very positive one. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. So this week on Infinite Canvas Ultra, we're introducing a new segment called Panel Discussions, where we're going to just talk about not so much new issues of comics that have come out, but well-established storylines that have been out for a few years, have already garnered enough talk about them, and we're going to review them and basically either make a recommendation or tell you to just steer clear of it.
Sort of like a book club, you could call it.
It's our version of a book club, and of course, the books we read, comic books.
Of
So,
course. I don't read real books,
yeah,
so.
I don't read no real books. The first book that we're going to be talking about on this feature is none other than The Sheriff of Babylon by Tom King and Mitch Garrods. I think it's Garrods. Either Jarrods or
Gerard?
Gerards.
I would maybe say Gerard
Let's
without
go
the S or
Gerard.
something.
Gerard? Mitch
Yeah, I
Gerard.
don't
We're gonna go
know.
with that.
I don't know.
I've never looked it up or heard him in an interview
No.
before. So you know what?
It's the Mitch
I'm
guy.
just gonna go with the Mitch guy,
The
the Mitchster, the
Mitchmeister.
Mitchmeister, or just Mitch Garrod,
Yeah,
because
there you
I think
go.
that's probably correct. So Sheriff of Babylon, this was a book that anybody that knows me and my opinion on comic books, I think Tom King is the best writer going
He's the
right now
man.
in comic books. I think
Yeah.
every project he is attached to is absolute gold.
Now run me and the audience down what books has Tom King written in the past?
Okay, so Tom King's works include obviously Sheriff of Babylon, which we're talking about today. This was kind of his breakout book.
Say even over Omega Men?
Yes, yeah,
Yeah?
this one predates Omega
Does
Men.
it?
Yeah, and it either predates or
Really?
it came out like really close in time, because I want to
Okay.
say this came out in 2014, and I think Omega Men came out in 2015 or 16. And this was what kind of busted him out onto the scene, other than Omega Men, like Michael just mentioned. Other books include the multiple Eisner Award-winning Mr. Miracle from last year, which is without a doubt the best piece of comic book fiction that was produced last year. It is absolutely incredible. It's actually the same exact team that did Sheriff of Babylon. I wouldn't put this title over Mr. Miracle. I think Mr. Miracle is front to back a perfect comic book, and everybody needs to read that. We should definitely do an episode on that, or do this feature on that one day.
Well, also, he's the writer of Vision, right?
Was just
When
about to
that would
get to that.
probably be what put him on the map more, right? Or is that, am I mixing up that too?
Well,
'Cause
Vision also came out after Sheriff of
did
Babylon.
it? Sheriff is 2015, I found.
But yeah,
So
Vision, either a lot of these works came out around the same time, but Sheriff of Babylon, where he got noticed, but yeah, Vision, another title of his that he wrote, and which is also a phenomenal, phenomenal book. Kind of very much almost a kindred spirit to Mr. Miracle, being that it's a book about kind of a character that, frankly, I mean, granted, yes, Vision has gotten a lot more popular in recent years due to his appearances in a lot of the MCU films, but it's still a character that is largely kind of unknown. And to be frank, the fact with how forward-thinking and experimental of a story Vision is, kind of a ballsy move on Marvel's part to put out the book that they did with Tom King's writing for that character, being that the character is just now getting much more shine being in the MCU films. Because it's essentially much like Mr. Miracle, and why I say it's a kindred spirit, it's a family drama book. It's about the character of the Vision, who is this android who's created by Tony Stark, who basically gets a job being a bodyguard for a Washington, D.C. official, and he's just trying to start a life with a manufactured family that he basically created for himself and try to have a sense of normalcy other than being this all-powerful super robot that is a bodyguard for the president or just some
Whoever,
diplomat.
yeah.
I can't remember. It's been a couple of years since I've read that book, but highly, highly recommended. And then the work that he's doing on the current run of Batman is absolutely phenomenal. One of the most just humanizing takes on that character that I've ever read. I think if we're talking about writers who have written the character in years past, especially the proper title to the character, I would say he's probably second to Grant Morrison, in my opinion, for somebody who has just taken such an utterly fresh and original take on the character, has done things that I've never seen done with that character, which is really amazing considering that Batman has been around for 80 years and has had a plethora of amazing talent behind that character. I would say if there's any, mainstream comic character that has had consistently great talent behind his stories,
It's
Batman's
Batman.
number one. There's really no other comic character that has that, and Tom King definitely stands apart in that league, and he definitely should be acknowledged way more than I feel like the fan base of people who read Batman are giving him, but I digress.
Send your hate mail to
Yeah, as always, infinitecanvasalt@gmail.com. But yeah, no, Sheriff of Babylon. So essentially, this and Omega Men are actually the two projects of his of Tom King's that I have not read. And Omega Men now being
the only
the only one I still have to get to.
I found that Omega Men, Sheriff of Babylon, and Vision all launched like first issue within like 2 months of each other
Oh
in
wow.
2015. Yeah, end
Wow,
of
so
2015. And like,
hell
what a
yeah.
way to come onto the scene as Tom
So
King, you
yeah, I
know?
would say all three of those projects really made him stand out, which is incredible. Yeah, Sheriff of Babylon is kind of a the premise of the book, kind of a autobiographical tale from King. He used to be in the CIA during the Iraq War in 2003 to 2004, I believe. And this is basically a highly, highly fabricated account, obviously, because he can't literally share his experiences from his time in the CIA.
Especially with the ending of this book, but
Oh my God. So a highly fabricated account, basically just of somebody who is living that life, being in that agency, which you just get that sense of experience and firsthand account from the writing in this book. And I think it's one of the things that makes this so special. And it's, yeah, essentially a CIA operative in Baghdad comes across just a police officer from Baghdad who was murdered.
Well,
And
he's actually his he's in Baghdad. This is like right after Saddam Hussein was
yes.
hit the history of Saddam Hussein and how he's dead. And he's there, Chris, the main character, is there to basically train a police force in
Right.
Baghdad.
Right.
And one of his trainees actually is murdered, and he's basically trying to solve the murder of one of his trainees.
And it just leads on to this 12-issue thrill ride that is just utterly heart-wrenching in a lot of parts, pretty difficult and disturbing to read, and exactly as it should be, being, a very kind of first-hand account of war and that time in history.
The book is very hard to read in some moments, actually. I don't think we're gonna get into any spoiler content
Yeah,
on
but
this.
we should probably refrain from
Probably refrain
spoilers.
from that, even there is a lot to this book that is very hard to read, just in terms of if Tom King, this is actually like pseudo biographical as he says it is, like. And we all know like the war crimes that happen
Yeah, which this book very explicitly details and shows Chris's firsthand encounters with it. Not so much on his part, but on parts of others and other people that he encounters in the story.
And it really does become tough to handle in points, but the story is actually pretty damn great, and
Absolutely.
the characters are really good. I love Nasir.
Oh my
He's
God.
like, Baghdad like cop. He's like a veteran cop. Chris kind of has to partner up with him to solve this murder because he has more of a grasp on the community and some of the goings on in Iraq during this time. And him and especially
I
Sophia.
was just about to bring up Sophia, who is
Yes.
my favorite character
Yeah,
in that
Sophia,
book.
who's basically like a some kind of political figure in the area.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of pull. Has like a huge tie to Christopher, kind of heavily insinuated that they're kind of on and off again lovers. And
I wouldn't even say insinuated, yeah, it's like pretty, shown.
Yeah.
Pretty early on, so that's not a spoiler or anything. Yeah, no, I totally enjoyed this book a lot, you know.
It's absolutely amazing, and it's very indicative of, you know, just like, it kind of like feels like while reading this, like you kind of get to know Tom King a little bit more as a person, mm-hmm. and it kind of makes sense, the themes of just bleakness, and like a lot of Tom King's work kind of like revels in and is very indebted to mental illness, post-traumatic stress, and it's this is very clear. It's like kind of like his, almost like a mission statement of him as a writer, where it's like it's like his origin story, mm-hmm. in a way, if like he himself were a comic book character. Right. And it like literally is, because I mean, obviously he's a happily married man, he doesn't have this politician lover in Baghdad, but like it's like the comic book version of him, and it's right. done in such an endearing and tasteful way, and just a phenomenal read. It's super incredible, just super. It just like, it feels like you were in Baghdad while reading this. The art from Mitch Jarrett,
Mitch Guy,
the Mitchster, is absolutely incredible. A bit more rough around the edges, I would say, than
Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle, but I like it. I really love it. Yeah. I think it looks incredible in the confines of this book.
And honestly, it works better, I think, with that, you know, being a little more rough, because the source material and like, you know, what the book is about is, you know, far more.
It's not as fantastic and whimsical as Mr. Miracle is.
That's what I was trying to get at there. This book is really phenomenal. Writing, the characters are really strong. Actually, like, one of my favorite, I have here, we both have our copies of it here to flip through while we talk. One of my favorite parts of the whole series is when he's speaking with Fatima, Nasir's wife. And it's like this little character moment. I think it's like an entire issue
where they're just kind of hanging out and drinking. That's probably my favorite issue of the series.
Yeah, I think that is such a good little, you know, character moment between these two. You know, a guy who like really shouldn't be there, you know, like with the, you know, the themes of American soldiers being there and them being in a country where they don't really belong and everything. And his, you know, his whole moment with her is, you know, super sweet. And
it's such a genuine moment of just friendship, mm-hmm. and creating a friendship despite of all this ugliness and horrors of war that you're surrounded by, and this murder that Chris is trying to investigate. It just feels like such a real moment, just something that, just like given the type of character that Chris is like, it just feels so natural, and just it's amazing. I absolutely love it. And then the issue is literally just a conversation between two people who really haven't spent much time together with each other, but are getting to know each other and drinking a shit ton of vodka. When I was reading that, it's like, Jesus.
Right.
Obviously, they're comic characters, so it won't affect them in any way, but it's like, damn, that's a lot of booze.
Right. That's one of my favorite parts. I liked how this book wasn't very, it's a war, you know, like, this is a war comic, but it's not very bombastic.
No.
There's very few scenes of action, really.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is, you know, like, Mitch Gerard's, his art is so good, like, the chase, or, well, I guess, I don't know if I would say a chase, but, like, the scene that takes place on the highway.
Oh, man.
With the rocket launcher, and his depiction of the car kind of exploding and rolling over and everything, like, he really draws in such a, I don't know, like, film quality way. Like, when I was reading it, it like felt like a film, like I was watching a film almost, you know?
Absolutely. Stylistic choice that I love too, and something that happens in Mr. Miracle that I, now visiting this after reading Mr. Miracle, kind of realize it's sort of a thing that kind of connects the books, like, very a stylistic thing that connects the books. And Mr. Miracle, the main villain of Mr. Miracle is the major DC villain Darkseid, and throughout the entire series there's just dark panels that just pop up in the mm-hmm. middle of the entire series that just say Darkseid is, and pretty much every act of gunfire, every act of rocket launcher being fired, really anything pertaining to violence, it's just a dark panel that just has the the action in it, the
Yeah,
bang,
bang, pow.
the stab, if someone's getting stabbed, something like that, which is, I really love that.
Yeah.
I love that it wasn't just confined to it being in a panel and like you seeing the action being done, that it literally just is in your face what is happening.
Right.
I thought that was a brilliant stylistic choice. I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
Not enough nice things to say about this. If you haven't hopped on the Tom King train, I highly endorse that you do so. I
Yeah.
mean,
Any
yeah,
honestly
any of them, really.
anywhere would be a good place to start. You know, I haven't read Omega Men either. It's one that I've actually owned for a number of years now, and it's just one of those that just kind of got left in the back catalog, but it probably will be very soon on my list of things to read coming up, because I have read Vision. Well, I haven't actually finished Vision. I've read the first volume of Vision, and then Mr. Miracle is, you know, so phenomenal. Totally
Absolutely.
deserving of the Eisner Awards it won.
It's brilliant.
And
But yeah, I mean, honestly, if you wanted to start with this, it'd be a perfect place to start. It's an absolutely phenomenal piece of fiction. It's incredible, and just not enough nice things to say about it.
yeah.
So yeah, panel discussions. The first one, Tom King's Sheriff of Babylon. What would you rank this out of the Infinite Canvas score of 10?
out of a 10, I'd probably give it like I give it a solid 8.
Yeah, I feel I'd probably actually give it like an 8.5 out of
Yeah.
10.
I wasn't as big on it as I think I went into it with a little bit of high expectations. I have two, me actually Dan here, and I have another friend Dan who were both really high on this book. And no, it was super great.
I think coming
Yeah.
off the initial high of reading it, and like kind of like digesting it a bit more. It did, my enjoyment of it kind of scaled back a little bit, but
Yeah.
obviously I'm still giving it an 8.5, so not that much.
Right.
Just so like listeners who maybe aren't too familiar with his work, and because we've also lauded it in such high praise, like what would you rate a title like Mr. Miracle of his?
That's easy, a 9
Yeah.
easily, if not higher.
I think I would be hard pressed to not give that a 10, in all
Yeah.
honesty. I do think that's kind of a story arc that's deserving of it.
Yeah, it probably is. I would probably even go a 9.5. It is hard to give something a perfect 10, you know, but
I feel comfortable giving it
yeah,
to
that one.
that.
Yeah, I still need to finish Vision, but from what I read of Vision, that was also like a strong 9,
Oh yeah.
for sure.
I think
So
you'll love it. The ending of that book is
yeah,
ridiculous.
the cliffhanger at the end of the first book is it has me very excited to read the rest. Very excited.
Absolutely.
So yeah,
First edition of panel
that was
discussions.
it.
So we're going to take a short break and we are going to review none other than The Big Day by Chance the Rapper. It's going to be a fun one, guys. You're in
Yeah.
for a treat. Get some snacks, get a drink.
We might
It's,
need some.
yeah, alcoholic or otherwise, probably more alcohol given this album, the
Yeah.
context of this album. Stay tuned, guys. It's gonna be a doozy. Welcome back to Infinite Canvas Ultra, everybody. Episode 4, and we are now to the headliner of the episode,
Yeah.
The Big Day
We're gonna
by
review the big day.
Chicago's native son, Chance the Rapper. We're Chicagoans. The Infinite Canvas Ultra headquarters is in Chicago. We're talking about a local artist. Sorry, I can't even hide. I can't even hide my feelings in the intro about this album. So, I think before we get into this, we should go through our personal histories
Right.
with Chance the
I wanted to do that
Rapper.
as well.
I think you should go first because you're someone who's more, a bit more of a fan of his previous work than
Sure.
I am.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm not a huge fan of
I'm
Chance
not
the
like a
Rapper.
fanboy,
I never really even listened to acid rap all that much.
but.
I maybe gave it a listen when it came out, and it just nothing. You know, maybe if I went back to it now, maybe I'd have more appreciation for it. But I know a lot of people love that album a lot. But I never really took to it. Outside of that, I think Coloring Book is okay. It definitely has a lot of, you know, it has a good number of really good tracks on it, I think. You know, even outside of that, his work with Donnie Trumpet thought was pretty fun. And, you know, Ultralight Beam, I think, is a shining highlight of
Yeah,
Kanye West's Life of Pablo. You know,
absolutely.
Chance's verse on that is super, super stellar. Yeah, I think Chance is fine. You know, when he comes with a good song to me, I think he really comes strong, and he has like a good presence, and he can really bring a lot of energy to a track.
Absolutely.
Especially
in his acid rap days, I think he had a presence and a persona that was pretty unique.
Yeah.
And you could definitely always tell this was Chance the Rapper, and it was a character persona that a lot of people very much look forward to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was fun to hear him, fun to hear his, like, inflections and, you know, just his flow and, like, you know, just his style.
Yeah.
Like, he brought, like, he had a very unique presence that was very,
very
beloved.
Goofy, very goofy, very, you know, playful. Like, fun, playful, goofy. What are your thoughts on Chance the Rapper, personally, Dave?
I mean, it's no secret I've never been a huge fan, and this review that we're about to go into, there is no bias with that at all, admittedly. And this is coming from someone that also will say that, like, an album like Acid Rap showed enormous potential. Absolutely.
Sure.
I mean, I as somebody who has basically always been relatively lukewarm on him, that is an album that I would still rate at like a 7.
Wow.
I think it's very strong. I think it showed promise.
You had no good regards for Chance at all.
This is very ironic that you bring that up. It's basically been, so we went from something like a project that I felt like a 7 to, and I'm glad you brought up Ultra Light Beam, which is a very significant, important highlight to Chance's career.
Yeah.
And as well it should be, his verse on that is absolutely incredible. Obviously, you know, being on a track with Kanye doesn't hurt. He has a habit of, as seen with Kid See Ghosts, mm-hmm. In his collaboration record with Kid Cudi, he has a habit of bringing out the best in a lot of artists that
sure.
he works with. And he went from being an artist who made an album that I was, like, pretty positive about, to with Coloring Book just kind of, I just had
throwing
bad,
all that goodwill out the window.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I feel like a record like Coloring Book is, well, that's something that, no, it's not something I'd ever want to listen to, but if I viewed it in a critical sense or wrote a review about it, I still would say that album is probably like a 6, because it's like, I acknowledge that there are good qualities about it, it's just not something for me, and
yeah.
even more so in the sense like where, it's a bit worse in that sense though, because like it's just not something there. Even though I could acknowledge its good qualities, it's not something I ever want to hear.
Sure.
Yeah. Because it's borderline, like, just as a music listener, it is just not my thing, and I find it just very tacky and
okay.
corny.
Fair enough.
And just
yeah.
it's very cornball, just too cornball for me. Whereas like a record like Acid Rap is like that, but in digestible proper portions.
Sure.
You know,
and you know, you don't have any kind of feelings on Donnie Trumpet, like his Donnie Trumpet stuff.
I feel even more negatively
yeah.
about that than okay. I do Coloring Book, actually.
Yeah.
There are some songs on there that I find utterly insufferable, but
I've never yeah, as much as I think some of the stuff off the Donnie Trumpet, you know, that's just like some of the stuff, like
mm-hmm.
as a whole, I don't listen to that entire record. I don't listen to Coloring Book as a whole.
Yeah.
There are certain tracks here and there that I do enjoy, which is saying a lot, especially in the light of his new album, which maybe we should
and also before we go into this, because this is a bit of a spoiler, this is not going to be nice. I do think also Chance the Rapper is a very good man, and
yeah.
I like him as a person.
Yeah.
But I think The Big Day is the most self-indulgent record I have ever heard, but self-indulgent in the worst possible way.
Mm-hmm.
It is not in the sense that this is an artist trying to really challenge himself and do something that is very forward-thinking and original, but basically just, this is like the most just watered down, I don't even know if you could, like, it surpasses generic. It really does.
Honestly.
This is basically rap music for your aunt.
No, that's a good way to put it, honestly.
This can go on at any family function, any church picnic, and nobody will notice it. And it's just, it's like,
it's background music.
It's background music for kids' birthday parties.
Yeah.
Like, it's seriously, it is just, it's so safe that it's just, It's borderline lifeless, but not only is it just lifeless, it is not good.
Well, so we both went into it, and we both listened to it, and we kind of separately did our own kind of track by track reviews. And for me, even going through this, what is it, 22 track long album? It's an hour and 20 minutes long. 22 tracks, including three skits, which are totally like, why are these even here?
Although I do admire that John Witherspoon from Friday was on
Oh,
like
is
the
that who
first
the?
skit
Okay.
and the
Yes,
Boondocks.
I did realize
But
that.
not even that's not enough of a saving grace.
No.
But it was good to hear his voice because
That's
I love Witherspoon.
Yeah, so kind of run me down some of your thoughts about some of the songs on here.
So, my method, because being that I'm already not that big of a fan of Chance the Rapper, and knowing the reputation of this album going in, and knowing that this is something that I would not want to have to devote too much time to, I wrote a lot of notes while listening to this so I could just kind of get all my thoughts out and get everything together, and there are maybe like two, three tracks on this that I enjoy. I'm gonna add a qu put a question mark to that because it's like they're fine while they're on, but
Which is
I don't
saying
want to revisit
that,
this ever.
that's saying a lot with this album because the tracks that are fine are like leagues above 90% of the track list here.
Yes.
The first,
Oh, yes.
I'll say right off the bat, the first three songs on this album are totally fine. They're
They're
in that
fine.
category.
They're okay.
For me, I was doing the same thing as Dan. I listened to this and I took some notes for each song and I actually gave a score to each song after I listened to it. The first track I gave a 5 out of 10. It's a fine opener. I think the instrumental's all right, the production's fine, and Chance actually has a pretty strong performance, especially in light of the rest of this album.
Absolutely.
And
Production on that track's pretty good. It has like a sort of house-centric beat, which he toys around with that genre. Some examples better than others. There's one track on here that where he goes for that style that is
maybe the
utterly
worst
garbage.
track, but
Yeah.
there's also
There's a
a
lot of
number.
contenders for
There's a
that.
number of tracks that are maybe the worst track. So the John Legend, his feature on the first tracks, it's okay. I actually don't think it's honestly that great.
No.
And the lyrics on this on the first track, All Day Long, are like laughably bad.
Oh, this whole album, the lyrical content is embarrassing.
Yeah,
It's utterly embarrassing.
the I linked the lyrics in my notes here, to this first track, which is like he's rhyming all the stupidest things, like life is short as a midget, but mine's a little LeBron. I'm about to book a show at the Dimmesdale Dimmadome, but that boy Advance got to be bigger than Diddy Kong. Like, oh. But my next tour, it got eight legs like Daddy Long. Like, these are so laughably bad. It's like.
And it's funny, like the shit that he's referencing. It's like he's trying to reference shit to people our age and in our demographic, but it's like, what? Are we supposed to think that's like clever or like cool? Like it's horrendous. It's
No.
absolutely
And it kind of and
embarrassing.
in your point it made me think of like
I just feel like you're talking down to me, like in a way. It's awful.
Well it made me think about Denzel Curry and how Denzel
That
Curry
is such a
will
great
he is
example.
like such a millennial rapper, he is our age, he's probably like
Yes.
what, 22, 23,
He's 24.
24, and
But he's my
he
age.
grew up with Mortal Kombat and
Yes.
Avatar, The Last Airbender, and he sneaks these little references to like anime and video games, and it all works there.
Even has songs that are specifically titled after nerdy
Yeah,
things. I mean,
Super
like Super
Saiyan,
Saiyan
yeah.
Superman, like.
And
What do you think? Automatically, most powerful being to ever exist. And it's like, it's clever. Like,
it
he uses
totally
it as an
works.
analogy for himself as a rapper, and it's just so lovable.
Whereas when Chance raps about the Dimmesdale Dimmadome, which is a Fairly Odd Parents reference,
Yeah.
oddly enough, like it just doesn't. It comes off as, like you said, like very corny. Like all these lines are just like so they're like really cringeworthy. And
Absolutely.
but this isn't even like the worst that this album gets.
And something I wrote down before we get off that track is I love that. I love the irony of him saying on this first track, I only drop classics. It's
Ooh, I don't even
like
know that I noticed that
he
one.
says that in that song, and that really jumped out at me because it's just like, do you really?
Well,
We
we'll find
have
out.
21 more tracks to find that out. And yeah, I mean, like you said, the first three tracks, fine. Eternal, I think, was kind of where it went from a little bit less fine to me.
Really? I actually thought Eternal was maybe the strongest of those first three. I thought the
Really?
production was kind of good. I thought I liked the funky instrumental on
I do
it.
like the instrumental quite a bit.
Smino had like a really weird feature.
The
Like
feature is
he
awful.
was all right at first, and then like he does like these different deliveries during the same verse, and like he just is like singing a couple lines
Right.
in like this really high-pitched voice, and then he goes back to his very deep rapping, and it like he's just like mixing up all these different delivery styles, and like none of it meshes together.
Right.
Otherwise, I thought like Chance, like the chorus was pretty good, and like his verses were pretty good. It was like really that Smino part that really kind of ruined it, I guess.
Sure. I mean, for me, from what I remember of the song, I was not too fond of Chance's performance on that. So I think that kind of really, it's so funny, and it's like something that I keep thinking about with this album. Is that the worst? And I'm not saying like I really don't want this review to come across as like being a hater or anything, or like, just kind of being overly negative, but it's just genuinely from a critique standpoint, like a music critic standpoint, he is the worst part of every track. Like you'll hear it, like what is a good instrumental, like the track that we were playing before we went on air. It's the one with In Vogue on it, I think.
I
That
got
one,
you.
yeah, I don't remember if that was the one you were playing, but that track kind of comes to mind immediately just because
Yeah, that is the En Vogue one.
like
En Vogue.
that beat was somebody else that like just straight up like 90s worship type instrumental would be really great. But then he just comes on and just sinks the ship completely with just like with his performances and what he's saying on there.
That song I actually think is his best performance on the album.
Really?
I think he comes in with like a good energy. He has like a weird accent on it. Like they're like he's like saying everything in like this weird, I don't know. He sounds different from like every other performance. But yeah, like you said, it is like this very, I wrote here in all caps, this song opens very strong. It's a very fun throwback, like it came out in like the mid 90s, like a boom bap kind of
Yeah.
house inspired dan like very dancey track. I said it's a successor to Fresh Prince's Summertime or something like
Exactly. Like
that.
it's something that I could see being like just the way the song sounds. Like I automatically envision the MTV video from the early 90s like
Fisheye
playing in my
lens.
head. Yeah. I think
I think
yeah.
Chance is fine on this track. I think he's actually pretty all right. Lyrically, again, it's like nothing great or anything, but it's also not even close to being really bad comparatively to everything else. And I think, Ari Lennox, who does the chorus on here, I'm not sure who that necessarily is, but that's a very good chorus that she sings.
Sure.
For me, that is the best track on the album. It's the only one that I'll probably ever revisit.
Sure. I cannot say there is anything I would revisit from this, but I'm glad that you grabbed something.
I gave that song an 8 out of 10, and that's probably just because everything else on this album's really bad.
Sure.
That like this song jumped out so much.
In the
It's probably not an
context.
8 out of 10 in all honesty, but like in this lineup, it is for sure the best song on the album for
I
me.
gotcha. But the so yeah, after Eternal, which is the third track, that's when we really get into this album just nosediving, just spiraling out of control, and that is the track Hot Shower,
That and
which is
it's the like the
utterly
biggest song on this
horrible.
album, I think. It's like the most played song. It's like the one that everyone's talking about, and I think it is
I think in a negative light, too, for the
maybe
most
that, yeah, that's probably
part.
true. It is among the worst songs on this album for sure.
And just everything about it, there is literally no saving grace to it. It is. Chance's performance is so nasally, like nails on a chalkboard level annoying. The hook, the fact that the hook that he's singing on that is so annoying, and the way that that's constructed is just utterly terrible. Yeah, like I wrote down in my notes that this song is torture.
And
It really
this might
is.
be one of the only points where oh, you know what? Never mind, because I actually DaBaby's. I was about to say that Chance might be better than one of his features, but actually, never mind. DaBaby is actually, again, the highlight of this song. He is much better than Chance's performance. Although it's not a saving grace at all. Like,
No.
he's there and he's fine. He's like kind of fun. But yeah, Chance's delivery on this, he sounds so sleepy and like uninterested. And like then again, like the lyrics, the lyrical content on this song is like just as bad and
And
as the first
it's kind of
song.
a feat that he managed to be both sleepy sounding and also incredibly annoying at the same time. Because, I mean, at least you would think, like, with him kind of having this sort of I'm not trying type delivery, at least it would just come across as boring. But it's still not. It's just grating. It's just very in your face at the same time. And it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. I would say that. And we were talking about this also before we went on air. Found a
Found a
good
good one.
one, or I would say the two worst tracks on this album.
I would, yeah, those are really good ones. I would put a number other ones. 5-year plan, I think, is really bad.
I don't know why, but for some reason, that is actually one of my biggest highlights of that album. I
Really? With
have
the
no
Randy
idea.
Newman
I
stuff?
don't know why. Just for some reason, while it was on, and I was just thinking to myself while listening to it, for some reason it just hit me. To be honest, if I'm gonna go into like huge detail of my process of listening to this, by the way, you guys owe us a lot for this episode because this was emotionally taxing. So the track before that one.
Well, there's a skit right before 5-year
Okay.
plan, and but Ballin' Flossin' is right
For
before
some, yeah,
that.
for some reason that song just like I hated that song immensely too. So then just hearing the skit, I'm just like I basically just kind of like laid down while listening to it, and that song came on, and like that's the thing that's so interesting to me about this album and the process of listening it is like it left me exhausted. So for some reason, hearing 5-Year Plan and it's just this like kind of piano-esque Randy Newman featured ballad. I just didn't mind it because I kind of just was in this state of giving up. So I think that's the only reason why I kind of connected with that song a little bit more and didn't mind it
That's
because
fair.
it wasn't, after everything that we've heard in the album so far, it wasn't this ultra in your face, dumb as fuck song. It was kind of like a cool down. And I think just for my experience of listening to this, I kind of needed that. So I think that's why at the, like where it falls in the album, I kind of just didn't mind it that much.
There is a there are like two sides of this album for me, and it's like, well, like if you count out the three tracks at the beginning that are okay and the one song that I do like, the other all of the other tracks are either, and they're all bad. Four tracks out of the 22 are okay to maybe good, and everything else is just bad. And there's two sides to that. There's like the in your face, like Chance is just like super nasally and annoying and sounds so bored. And then there's like other tracks that are like just so bland and sleepy. And it sounds like he could have been asleep when recording it. Like the.
And like, how do you get Gucci Mane to be on your album and it's the mo like one of the most forgettable things ever? I mean, granted, like for one thing, that's like such a weird feature. Like I never would have imagined Atlanta trap legend Gucci Mane to be collaborating with Chance the Rapper, but also it's just like also to have an appearance on this album that is just so obviously a paycheck and nothing more. It's incredible. It's almost a feat to achieve like that level of just mediocrity.
But there's like a lot more that is like just not even outside of the boundaries of mediocrity that is just like straight up bad. Like the song Rue, which has Taylor Bennett, which is his brother, featured on it, but like it starts with this really awful synth lead, like instrumental that I wrote here, sounds like something the Duffer Brothers left behind from the Stranger Things soundtrack or something. And Chance is, like, rapping over it, and then, like, that the two just don't mesh.
No.
And the refrain, the refrain of that song where it's, like, this woman just, like, saying, "Rooster's calling in the dis." Like, it's, like, so bad.
Which is actually this kind of... they've been around for a while. There's, like, this indie folk duo. They're called Coco Rosie.
Okay.
They were around in, like, the early 2000s.
And that's what that is?
That's who that is. And it was really jarring
it's
to
so
see
jarring.
Them. I haven't seen them on anything in, like, years. And it's just like, oh, here they are on this. And, yeah, it's just such a mismatch of a feature.
And then that, and then the next track, The Big Day, which is, like, the title track of this album... Which is, like, literally just 4 minutes of Chance singing the exact same chorus over and over again, like, really terribly.
Over what's literally, I mean, I think this was done intentionally, well, not the generic part, but sounds like generic wedding music.
Yeah.
Which was, like, why would you think the concept of just making a record
about... He loves his wife, Dan.
Making a record about the fact that you got married is a good idea. Like, what? What does that bring to the table at all? Like, what statement are you making other than just what you said?
Right.
That you love your wife. Like, great. I'm so happy. But does that make...
Musically, there's nothing enticing or exciting about that theme.
Is that, really? Is that an excuse to make an hour and 17 long album? Or 17 minute long album? And no. And we let's definitely stay on that, because I actually... I think I have PTSD from that song, in all honesty, because I literally blocked that out of my mind.
Really?
I don't even think I wrote about it.
I woke up this morning and it was like in my head. That chorus was like somehow in my head when I was like showering this morning. And then like to top that song off, it has the Francis and the Lights feature where he's just like screaming in the middle of this. He's just fuck shit, and it's just like, what is even happening?
It went from, because, so when that song started, I legit thought this was Chance making a song intended to be played at weddings. Like, like, what else of an excuse
sure.
is there? It's just literally Chance moaning and going, "This is my big day," and it's just like, you know,
he's mumbling, like, the chorus, and he mumbles it through 4 minutes.
Yes, it's
this
like
is the greatest day of my life.
Yeah, with like swelling strings and like a very generic kind of like stagnant beat, kind of like lumbering beat, and then, but then I guess you could, if you were to say like a positive about that ending part where it's just this. Out of nowhere, just out, like, Tourette's solo, basically. Like, I can't describe it as anything other than that. What does that bring to this? I mean, like, I would have rather it had just been this, like, wedding song. This terrible, terrible wedding song that could be played at the most generic wedding want to go to. My aunt's wedding. But then you just... This is what you... bring to it for a sense of variety.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that? Who heard that? I guess Chance did and was like, "This is a good idea." It's appalling.
Yeah.
It is absolutely appalling.
And literally, I'll say this: the last, and Dan listened to this as far as I could tell in like two sittings. Basically, you listen to like 15 songs and then like the last five to seven tracks in a different setting, and. Literally, the last, like, 5 to 7 tracks are just so... They just all melt together in this, like, cacophony of just, like, bland shit. And, there's like, literally nothing redeeming out of any of the final, you know, stretch of this album. Or even the middle of this album. Like, there's, like, so little to grasp at here.
One of the funny things, I thought was hilarious... about this album. So, yeah, I got to track 17 on my first listen, and I'm not kidding, listeners. I actually went for a walk after that because I just needed, like, fresh air, and I just needed to just... Because, okay, so I'm kind of weird with things like this, just, like, being the big music nerd that I am. If I am exposed to a piece of music that I just feel so negatively about. It makes me feel kind of weird. Like, I almost get, like, this, like, sick sort of sensation. And I just had to, like, go and walk around my neighborhood and just kind of decompress, because it just, like, bothered me that, like, something with this much money backing it and, like, this highly publicized and from an artist like this is out and is just a thing that is, you know, widely consumed by a lot of people and enjoyed in some circles, although this is kind of proving to be a gigantic flop. But regardless, I just needed to kind of, like, disconnect from things and just, like, take a little break. And was so funny coming back to finish this off so I could review this album for the show today. There's a skit. It's called Our House, and it literally opens with these two women going, "Shit, I'm still at this wedding?" And I had to, like, whoever that was featured on that, it's like, you've basically summed up, like, how I feel about, like, still being here, this metaphorical wedding of this album. It's just, it's so bloated, and it there just doesn't need to be.
There's no reason why this album should be in anywhere near an hour long, especially an hour and 15 minutes.
Before we progress anymore, we have to talk about Ball and Flossin.
Bounce is on my mind. I wrote that in my notes because they just, like, said bounce a lot in the song.
Ball and Flossin, like, that might actually be, it's hard between those two that I chose. I think if I were to rank my top three most hated songs on this, it probably would be Hot Shower, Ball and Flossin, and then Found a Good One. That would easily be my second most hated song in this album.
I'll say I gave Ball and Flossin a 4 out of 10, and that's only due to I have here listenable house inspired instrumental. Listenable is a very good compliment on this album, and 4 out of 10 is probably even too high. I thought Shawn Mendes was pretty, like, lackluster. I'm not a Shawn Mendes guy.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm sure he's better than this.
The placement of his feature on this was just so, so terrible.
Yeah.
And then the fucking peanut butter jelly and a baseball bat lyrics. Like, we're literally referencing this in 2019.
I noticed literally. That too. And I have written here the interlude before his first verse for Chance is maybe the cringiest part of the entire album.
I can't necessarily
remember what it was, but if it got me to write that, it was probably really bad.
It's probably best forgotten.
I do have a saving grace, and that's that it's at least over pretty quick, because it's only like 2.5 minutes long or something like that.
Sure.
Whereas a lot of this album reaches over like 4 minutes. And I think Big Day or whatever is like 5 minutes long or something. Like, there's like some tracks that just go on forever and just feel like they are so long.
They do. Another weird thing about, in the track 5-Year Plan, like, also one of the longest songs, and somehow I was okay with it. That song and Zanies and Fools I thought was
really
okay. I don't know, like,
it's maybe one of the least, like,
it's the least offensive. The
sure.
Nicki Minaj feature is I did not care for.
Yeah. Second time that she's featured on this album. She's on it twice.
She's on
it
twice. In the
last, like, 5 songs. And no one else
Why not more
twice.
Megan Thee Stallion? Who,
right.
The Megan Thee Stallion feature on this album is my favorite part about this album. I haven't actually not listened to her project yet. I need to stop sleeping on that and listen to that. Because I feel like I would very much enjoy that.
But that her part does not save that song, because it's like 40 seconds long.
Doesn't,
and the rest
yeah.
of, I forget which song that she's actually on, Handsome.
But within that, those short performances, it is great. It's exciting. The lyricism is amazing. The charisma that is, like, pouring through her 40 second long performances is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great. That is literally my favorite part, favorite attribute of The Big Day.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've talked about our highlights, which are few and far between. We've talked about the many lowlights. What do you think is a score for this album?
I would give this a 1 out of 10.
Yeah, I would. That's a totally respectable score. I would maybe give it a 2. Not that it matters much.
And that's fair, because, like, it sounds like you did enjoy or, like, connect to more. You actually have a song on this that you would probably throw into your Spotify.
I listened to it on the way here, so. And was like singing along to it. I was like, that's pretty good.
So I think that warrants a two.
Yeah.
As opposed to my one.
There's a song that's good, three that are meh, and like some fairly good features spartly, you know, like intersected throughout. But as a whole, like, this is such a miserable album. It's a very bad listening experience. It's hard to get through.
It's too long.
Chance doesn't feel like he wants to be there and sing or rap any of this album.
I kind of disagree on that, actually. Really? I honestly, like, the entire time listening to this, it kind of, to me anyway, it feels like he actually is coming from a place where he believes in this.
I'm sure he does.
And actually thinks that he is making a project that is worthwhile with this. And I don't know. I mean,
there's like, for me, Chance is like at his best when he's like really, when he is like in your face, but he's at least like fun and there's like good production behind him. And he's like, he feels upbeat and he's coming at you at 100%. And I don't think any of this album kind of has that for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
He sounds so lazy and his rapping is very slow, which like a lot of the time Chance is really energetic. You know, there's a lot that's really bad on this record in terms of production and some of the features. But really for me, like the biggest letdown of this entire album is Chance himself.
Yeah, it's his lyricism, his performances. I actually kept a counter of how many times I cringed or like winced a little bit while hearing everything, all these reactions derived from his lyricism and his performances. And it happened 37 times.
Wow.
37 times in the midst of listening to this album, I cringed a little and just like felt...
That's like 1.7 cringes per song.
I know. It's that's bad. Crazy. And that is just a testament to just how awful of a job he did on this.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. It's really sad to see in the course of like, what, 6-7 years? Like from when he kind of first was emerging on the scene with 10 Day and Acid Rap, like how this dude who I felt had so much potential to like grow into something that is like really special and be like another really great voice for Chicago rap, to just be delegated to making music that's as tacky as the Kit Kat commercials that he stars in.
Yeah,
it's very disappointing. And yeah, I would have to say this is the worst album I've listened to in 2019 so far.
I mean, that is for sure. You know, I'm right there with you. It's hard to kind of give it that because music is so selective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't go out of my way to listen to albums that are bad or that I don't like, or I'll turn them off. You know, I was relegated. I had to listen to this entire album, and it is for sure easily the worst album I've heard this year. Yeah, it's bad, and I kind of don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, I think this horse is in the grave. We don't have to keep beating it anymore.
Yeah.
But what did you think of The Big Day by Chance the Rapper? Let us know at infinitecanvasalt@gmail.com or give us a tweet at IICUltraPod or send hate mail, but hopefully our listeners agree. But, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't feel like ever listening to this album again. And I don't have much hope for Chance the Rapper in the future. Maybe he learns from it. But,
maybe he does.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Exactly. He seems to be kind of backpedaling on this a little bit. And
yeah.
Like along a lot of the negative receptions. And he is kind of notorious for sort of getting any bad publicity kind of pushed under the rug.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother discussion for a whole another podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, The Big Day, Chance the Rapper. That's a 1 out of 10 for me.
2 out of 10 for me.
And yeah.
You want to take a break and we'll get back with some questions and some shout outs?
I think that will definitely mend my broken soul from listening to this album.
Let's close this out strong.
Exactly.
What do you guys think?
On a positive note.
Yeah.
See you in a few, everybody. Hey everybody, Infinite Canvas Ultra, episode 4. A bit of breaking news, actually. First time we're ever doing this on this show at the time of like 10:30 at night on August 14th. So we were just talking about Brockhampton earlier in the episode, and while we were, you know, recording and getting the show together, they dropped their what is now third and final single for their new album Ginger called Boy Bye, and we're gonna share some thoughts on this.
Yeah.
It's super funny because we were just kind of both feeling very, very negatively about the tracks that have been leading up to Ginger so far, and this new single is without a doubt my favorite single
Oh, easily.
to come out from this cycle, this promotion period for
Yeah.
Ginger.
And let's also say, by the time you hear this, the album will already be
The
out.
album
They
will be
just
out.
announced that August 23rd is the release date for it.
Yep.
And yeah, like Dan said, this is a.
We will be reviewing it.
Yeah, for
We
sure.
expect the review for that. Hopefully, it'll be much more positive than our
Yeah,
big day review that we just concluded.
definitely.
I can already tell
But
it
hopefully more
will
positive than the first two songs have been,
be.
because we
Exactly.
just, you know, we
Hopefully, those songs
literally,
will grow on me
yeah,
more.
literally just got done listening to this song, Boy Bye, and just in terms of basically everything, production, the verses, there's a really strong introductive verse from Don McLennan, who has like the longest part on the song, I would say. It's actually a pretty short track. It's only 2 minutes and 22 seconds.
Everybody really kills it. Mad
Yeah.
Champion's great. Bareface is really
I
great. I
thought
really
Kevin
enjoyed his
Abstract. I
part.
thought Kevin Abstract was really good on it, and I've actually
Yeah.
been kind of down on him recently, like we said earlier, like not even just outside of his own like little things that he does on Twitter and like, you know, social media activity. Like I think him and his solo album that came out earlier this year, Kevin Abstract hasn't been as positive of a voice for Brockhampton in
Sure.
terms of the, you know, in terms of his hooks and his verses, but I thought he was actually pretty strong on this track.
Absolutely. I mean, I enjoy Arizona Baby. I like just that little bit, I think. Like, that performance
Yeah.
was probably more impressive than a good majority of that
Yeah.
record. That was great. So it's sort of renewed my hope for that album. Like, I'm confident regardless. I'm going to probably feeling at least a 7 on that album, but I hope
Yeah. Even with two bad singles up front?
I think so. I think there still will be enough material that will wow me. I have a lot of faith in them.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty big diehard for them, so we'll see what happens. But yeah,
Some.
these are good notes to
Yeah.
kind of like go back to on the show. I'm happy that, this came out in the midst of us recording this
Yeah.
and that we could talk about it
I'm
and have this
glad,
on the episode.
I'm glad there's a glimmer of hope in my eye now for the Brockhampton album that's coming out
Absolutely.
next week.
And expect a Ginger review probably come in, say, like 2 episodes from now, maybe one
Something
more
like that.
episode. Yeah,
Something like
it's
that.
in the near future.
Yeah.
We got something planned for next week. So actually, yeah, that episode, and then we'll probably get right into it. I'm excited. But as always, we've now reached one of my favorite segments of the show, Q&A, where we
Yeah.
hear from you, the adoring public. Our first question comes from a frequent writer, Jose, two-time Jose. He actually had a phenomenal question last week about coast to coast albums, movies, things that we have shifted our opinion on in recent years. And he comes back with a vengeance with another can't talk, great question, asking us about basically kind of similar premise, but it's albums, TV shows, movies that we acknowledge are great and are very critically
Like
lauded and
objectively
adored.
good.
Yeah, objectively good properties that we personally hate and just are not big fans of. Michael, do you have an answer for that one, or do you still need a little time to
Dan, take it
marinate?
away.
Because
If you got
I
something.
got one right away. It is
Okay.
actually Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. I am not a fan of that album
At
at
all?
all. No, I think it's super boring. I think it is like one of the most overrated rock records ever made, in all honesty. Like, I enjoy Pink Floyd, but I'm much more partial to the ultra psychedelic Syd Barrett era of their career, not
Okay.
so much the Wall, Wish You Were Here era. I think it's just like a little bit too. I mean, it's obviously it is dad rock, being of like, how old it is and like the circles that embrace it, but just even for its time, I just find it to be like very bland. Just doesn't really add much. I acknowledge that, it influenced quite a lot, especially for prog rock bands and even bands that I deeply love, like a band like Radiohead. But it is just not my cup of tea. I find that record to be just super boring. Does have some moments. There are some tracks that I like, but it's nothing that I really ever want to listen to or throw on in my free listening time.
Fair enough. I really, I'm really racking my mind. I'm actually going through a list of like movies that are critically acclaimed that people hate. And for some reason, Borat's on there, which is really weird. Like, Lost in Translation? Who says Lost in Translation? Bad? What the fuck?
Right?
I don't know. This is a tough question. I'm really trying to think of anything, like even like a video game or something that's highly acclaimed. I mean, I guess like something that I could point to maybe is like the Dark Souls series of video games. You know, let's sneak in some video game talk here. And those
Totally.
games, I can totally understand why people love them, and they are critical darlings and actually pretty popular. And I have no interest in Dark Souls. I have no interest in even Bloodborne. It just doesn't do anything for me personally. So that's kind of where I would come at with that. Not that I necessarily think that they're bad per se, but.
And then I think, I don't know if there's really anything else that like glaringly jumps into
Yeah,
my
it's a tough
mind.
question. I would have to think real hard on that one.
I'm sure I'll think of something probably once we get off air. But
Right.
another question comes from Neil, who wanted to know, this is kind of harkening back to now two of our previous episodes, which is good. I like that we're getting
Yeah.
questions harkening back to our previous episodes. What would you deem to be the best cameo or favorite scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? And also, where would you rank it against other Tarantino films? Which is, we kind of touched upon the ranking already. I guess we could get like super in depth and
Super
maybe like
detailed.
do an actual like maybe top five ranking or just rank all of them, which would actually be kind of cool.
Yeah, let's do a quick ranking. I'm actually gonna look up Quentin Tarantino films right now. I could probably name them all off the top of my head, but
While we do that, though, do you have a favorite scene or cameo that comes to mind?
for me, I would say I really like Bruce Dern's appearance in the film. He
Yeah.
doesn't like make a cameo as like someone you would know. Like he's not like the Bruce Lee cameo or anything like that, but I really enjoyed Bruce Dern being involved in the movie, and his character is really fun, and that part is actually like it's like parts funny and also like really sad and like
It is.
fucked up. But no, I totally enjoyed Bruce Dern being in there. I always like to see him show up in anything. You got anything?
I would have to go with Bruce Dern also for
Yeah.
favorite cameo. Like I think his scene is just so poignant, and I think it's a build up to such a deeply intense point in that movie. Like I literally was on the edge of my seat during what that scene leads
Right.
to. And just genuinely nervous, being that I love Cliff Booth, the character played by Brad Pitt, so much in that movie, and was very worried that something bad was gonna happen to him, and it was all because of just his wanting to visit Bruce Dern's character. So, really love that moment. In terms of also just favorite scene, we talked about this on, I think we talked about this on the
The mid-year.
mid-year list, but that scene where DiCaprio's character, totally blanking on his name right now.
Rick Boo. No, Rick Dalton.
Rick Dalton is just trying to read that novel on set of the TV
Yeah.
show, and he has that conversation with the young girl who's also part of the show. I think that scene is just genius. I think that it like perfectly encapsulates Dalton's character in one scene, just this ultra vulnerable guy who is coming from a place where he really loves what he does, but he's just not thriving in what he
Yeah.
does. I think it's just such a just super innocent moment, just like sweet moment, and I really love that scene
Yeah.
quite a bit.
Same here. I think all the stuff, perhaps my favorite, you know, sequences in that movie are when Rick Dalton is on the set of that TV show where he's the villain with the he's got the like the Fu Manchu kind of, you
Yeah.
know, mustache going. I think that is probably some of my favorite stuff of that movie altogether.
Absolutely. So for this ranking, let's not include things that were written. That's just
Sure, yeah.
nine.
Well, I mean, I would include True Romance because I think that is
Let's
so,
take
but
that.
yeah,
Yeah, we're
let's
gonna
just do
take that off
director.
the table. We're
Let's just
just
do
gonna
director.
do, yeah, just to keep it a
And
little bit
no
more
Dusk Till
simple.
Dawn.
Unfortunately, no. Just because it's like we're already dealing with a lot of films here. Fair enough. So let's just keep it cut and dry. This was directed by Quentin Tarantino. Do you want to go first, or do you want?
Yeah,
to go
I'll first? Go first. I'll just, like, you know, this isn't a definitive list or anything. Maybe we'll do like a bigger episode dedicated to this in the future or something.
Also, do you want to just lump Kill Bill 1 and 2 together?
Yeah. Okay. I would have lumped.
We'll just refer together. To it as Kill Bill.
Yeah. For my maybe my least favorite, I would maybe go Kill Bill. Honestly.
Okay.
But for me, it's either that or Jackie Brown. I know a lot of people really enjoy Jackie Brown a lot, but I've never really taken to that film as much as some other people. And then Kill Bill, I think, is great. You know, even Jackie Brown is great. But yeah, Kill Bill, I haven't watched too many times. I like don't really go back to it very often. Mm-hmm. I actually have a very sweet spot for Death Proof, but I would maybe put Hateful Eight. So I'd maybe go Jackie Brown last, Kill Bill, Hateful Eight, Death Proof, which I actually think is very underrated, very fun movie.
Sure.
Probably Django.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I have to put Once Upon a Time somewhere in here. Probably put, like, Death Proof and then Once Upon a Time, Django, Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds, and then my favorite Tarantino film, I think, definitively is Reservoir Dogs.
Good choice.
Easily for me.
I am currently writing this out. Putting this all together.
Yeah, I mean, he has no bad movie in my eyes in terms of, you know, movies that he's actually directed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're definitely all winners, for sure. So, as my list is going right now, it would be, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say this about one of your kind of...
Is it like, Death Proof?
It's Death Proof death at the bottom, that's unfortunately.
Fair. I'm a huge horror guy, so that makes sense why I probably like that movie so much.
But... Absolutely. I would just say, like, in terms of his body of work, it kind of, like, left, like, the least amount of impact on me. Okay, so then after that would be Jackie Brown. After that would be Hateful Eight, Kill Bill. I think after Kill Bill would be Once Upon a Time. And then we're going to go...
It's tough.
Django, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, and Inglourious Basterds.
Okay, we're very, very close in that last half there. I think we were both Once Upon a Time, and then Django, Pulp Fiction, and then just those last two, Inglourious and Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm. Inglourious, like, yeah, just... I don't know, I think that is his most... In a body of work that is, like, filled of... classics, like, it's just I just always feel that movie is like his most like fully realized most ambitious, just it's I don't know, it's perfect.
It's also probably his most rewatchable movie, I'd say. Like I could watch that movie
absolutely
like all the time.
I would say honestly between Inglourious and Reservoir Dogs, it's like they're my top two for like two utterly different reasons. Reservoir Dogs in the sense that it is just so masterful in its simplicity. It's very obviously a first movie, and that is exactly why I love it, because it's like it's a debut that just hits every note so perfectly, and it's just like I would also say like one of the most just like it's a film that its messages like about violence and just like how it portrays violence is just such a real gritty just kind of horrifying way that it is just so poignant and just so incredibly done that I
totally agree.
Also I think like probably we've talked about this before, I think that is my first exposure to his work. I can't really, I think it went Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, and then Kill Bill. I think those were the first three that I ever saw. So which Kill Bill like I really loved a lot when I was younger, but, like, it's kind of diminished a little bit. But I still do hold Kill Bill Volume 1 in pretty high regard, though. Yeah, I very much enjoy that movie.
I think Volume 1 is the superior, for sure.
Absolutely. But, yeah, good question. I'm glad we could fit in some more Tarantino talk. That was a good little...
maybe we'll take a break from the Tarantino for a little bit.
Yeah, I could probably take a little vacation from him for a minute. But, yeah, that was a good question. It led into a really good segment. Nice little gem on the show. But yeah, if you got any questions, we would love to hear them on Q&A. You can reach us at infinitecanvasalt@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at ICUltraPod. You could shoot us DMs on infinitecanvasultra at Instagram. You know where to find us.
Yeah.
If you listen to the show, you could should also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because it's a thing you could do. Spread
Please
the
do that.
love.
Yeah.
We're a 5-star organization. You're a 5-star fan base, so it's a win-win situation. We're gonna take a short little break, close out with some shout-outs, and yeah, see you in a couple. Hello, everybody. Infinite Canvas Ultra, episode 4. Another one in the books, wrapping it up. Closing out, as always, with some shout-outs. I think my first shout-out is gonna go to one of the first people we were talking about on the show today, Tom King. Thanks for being an incredible comic book writer. Like, if you have any interest in the comic book medium at all, you owe it to yourself to catch yourself up on his work. If not, what we talked about today was Sheriff of Babylon. Definitely grab Mr. Miracle. You don't have to be a superhero guy to read that book. Anybody can read it.
I actually had a friend last night who was asking for comic book recommendations, and I don't think I said anything by Tom King, and I feel like I should be reprimanded for that. I should go back and tell
Oh,
him.
that's all
But maybe
good.
he'll listen to the podcast. Maybe he'll get it all then.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Got any shout-outs this week, Michael?
I'll give a shout out to actually this, might be a little bit of a looking forward to what we got up next, but I'm gonna give a shout out to The Boys.
Hell yeah.
The new Amazon series based on the Garth Ennis comic long running comic series from the what, mid 2000s.
I think it came out like 2005 or
Yeah, something
6,
like that.
something like that.
Super, a lot of buzz about this new show, and I'm about halfway through it, and I've been really enjoying it so far. So that might be something we talk about coming up here. But other than that, I've actually been watching Glow as well. The third season of Glow just came out, and then I think that's also a really good one.
Shout out to Glow.
You got any more shout outs?
I'm gonna shout out my friend Rob. Who's
Okay.
looking at you, Rob? Trying to think if I have any others.
Let's shout out 616 again. Shout out
Yes,
to Ian
definitely.
Scherer.
Shout out to Ian Scherer and the artist formerly known as Mike Charles. They have a great YouTube channel, podcast, where they largely talk about wrestling and video games, but also do their own kind of comedy-related skits and whatnot. They have a great organization going there. I love them. They're great folks. Well, I look forward to collaborating with them more in the
Hell
future.
yeah.
Probably gonna have them on this show in the near future once we start kind of inviting some guests on.
Yeah.
We're not exclusionary folks over here at Infinite
No,
Canvas. We
sir.
have an open door policy.
If your mom ever wants to get on the
Let's get
podcast,
my mom on the show. Shout out to my mom.
shout out to Dan's mom.
Yeah, my mom's amazing. I don't know. That's about it. Just shout out to everybody. Shout out to everybody listening to this right now.
Yeah.
Appreciate the support.
Shout out to everyone who's been supporting us and giving us good feedback. Our second episode, by the time we're recording this, just went up. So, we're getting a lot of good feedback. We're really excited to keep this going and hoping people keep listening.
Absolutely. It's great. We absolutely love it. And I mean, we'd be doing this anyway, but this is having the extra support is great motivation to keep going. So shout out to all of you. We love you. And yeah, that concludes it. Infinite Canvas episode 4. See you again next Monday.
See you guys.